Accession number 18523, Reel 4.
Ted Winkler, Reel 4. You were just telling me about these projectiles, cardboard projectiles.
Yes, I couldn't verify, but I was rather surprised because nobody on the English side used to be worried about splinters, and we, of course, covered behind whatever we could find.
So you're in the cellar at Tilburg?
Yeah. It was rather claustrophobic, and they got one or two people out and put them into the gangway, and they actually fired what I presume were blanks or something to intimidate them, to get information from them.
Did you have this kind of treatment?
I was not personally, no. No, I was not. I was inside the group which were in the cages. And from there they sent us to Brussels, into a camp.
Into a proper POW camp?
Into a POW camp, yes.
What was that like?
Well, that was all right. And that was when I actually remember seeing Messerschmitt 262 coming over and doing some damage and flying away without damage to itself.
And this was in the city of Brussels itself, was it?
Just outside Brussels, yeah.
Who was in charge of this camp?
The British were in charge of that camp.
British Army?
British Army, I would say, yes. And from there they sent us to France. I think I've got it here.
We should say you have a record on your mess tin of the places you were at as a POW.
Yeah.
It says you were
Tilburg, Brussels, and then we went to Caen into a prisoner of war camp. And we were there collecting scrap, which was loaded at Caen Harbour and sent to England. And another group of us went to Audreux, and there we were digging bodies up, German and British, and transferring them to war graves, which we dug at. The one that I remember most was at Ranville.
How were you being treated by now?
Oh, we were treated perfectly well until we lost the war completely, until the surrender. When the surrender came, we didn't get any more razor blades, cigarettes or soap. That was one of the things that rather surprised us.
So the change in treatment was quite sudden with the loss of the war?
Yes, it was quite sudden, yeah. Well, before we used to get tins of 50 cigarettes and such like, razor blades, soap. The soap was a very good bargaining with the French people. Used to get Lux soap and exchange it for bread or whatever. And I started a bit of a business there. On one of the cemeteries at Ranville, I produced some soap and asked the chappy there to get me some flints for lighters in exchange. And I made lighters and sold them to the more well-off German prisoner of war, which were drivers and had the opportunity to sell some of their petrol to the French farmers. So I used to exchange a lighter, which I made in a toothpaste tin, if you remember those, cotton wool, a flint put into a piece of wood which was clamped in, in effect, made a slit, clamped it in, and a broken razor blade, scraped the razor blade onto the cotton inside the tin and blew it, and you had your lighter.
Did it work adequately?
It worked adequately, yes. And I made quite a business of those. And once I had saturated all the drivers with their own lighters, I went on to another thing. I got a type of oxygen tube, the polo pot, they call them. And I flogged them for cigarettes. And of course, with cigarettes, you could buy other things. So, quite a time.
So you were using your engineering skills?
Oh, yes. Yeah. Actually, in Cayenne, it was... I made a clock out of this... What was Canadian link sausage tins. They were sort of gold coloured inside, and I made a clock, cutting it out of with a shear, and it's like putting pinions. Got the whole clock together and put a pendulum on and got it going in the end, and the commander of the camp gave me 200 cigarettes for it. I was quite surprised when he saw. He used to say, you come by and throw a couple of empty tins of bully beef over the side of Camp 4, and they'll be driving out of Camp 1 with a Volkswagen.
But what did you need the money for? Did you want to save the money, or you wanted
I didn't want any money.
Or what?
No, it was purely sort of bargaining. You could buy yourself luxuries, in effect.
But
I was never really into money. It was getting, for instance, a bottle of Calvados or something like it. And that was quite a long time we were there, and we buried quite a few people at that camp in Amfreville, Ranville, and the various camps down there.
Then?
Well, we were still getting the various bits of scrap and loading them on the various ships. And I know in one case I had the job of painting the name on again, which of course was camouflage on one of the ships, hanging over the side. And I got a packet of 20 woodmines in exchange for doing that. And we used to load all the silk was surplus equipment. There was a colossal pile on the dockside in Cayenne. And there was quite a few bits and pieces we could sell to the French, which of course disappeared from there. The interesting thing in Cayenne was that the camp we were in, it was limestone there, and we had the house-type tents, if you remember, 10-man tents. So we dug down and put floors in it, and it was quite an elaborate time because we had wood carvers and the carved chef sets, and, you know, it was a very good time we had there. We weren't short of anything, because things with cigarettes and the drug improved after a while. And of course, from there, they sent us to Belgium, to Schepeke.
This was a camp in Belgium?
It was a camp in Belgium. It was a non-working camp. We couldn't get out. We couldn't do any deals or anything.
What was the treatment like here?
This was the worst experience in my life. We got very little food, hardly anything to drink, and we lost a lot of weight. I came into that camp as a very fit German paratrooper. I when I came to England on the ferry, I weighed 7 stone. I'd lost that much weight, and I used to lay down to comb my hair.
Why were conditions so bad here?
As far as we could find out, that the commandant of the camp was a German Jew who had joined the British Army. And he was sort of saying he was going to give us the rations which the Jews had in the last few days in Bergen-Belsen or whatever. And we used to get a small loaf of bread, which I would say is about possibly a pound loaf. And we used to have to divide it by 16 men in the morning. We had one flat teaspoonful of jam to divide by 16 people. For the dinner, we used to get one of our dishes, we had the army dishes, full of potatoes which were not permitted to be washed, peeled, or anything. No salt with them, just the potatoes into the big kitchen things. Used to boil them, and we had alternatively beetroot or leek in this as a sort of flavoring. And for every 100 men, there was one tin of corned beef added to the stew. We got tea, but not enough to satisfy most of our thirst. We were always happy if it rained. We could soak up some water. And there was people even going to the latrine and sucking the moisture off the... It was winter time, sort of. And that was a place where I actually had a taste of a bit of a rat and pigeon. Somebody had caught a rat, and that was the one camp I got my only sort of international Red Cross contribution, which was 2 cigarettes, which was provided by Argentina. That was all I ever got from the International Red Cross.
Did you ever see this commandant?
No, we didn't see him because we couldn't get out of the camp, or we were stuck in the barracks. That was it. We couldn't move. And besides, we weren't very keen to move. Most of the time we were laying down.
Did anybody commit suicide?
I couldn't say whether there were suicides, but we had a few deaths in the camp.
What did they die of?
I couldn't tell you because we were that isolated. We were all in camps and barracks. We were not permitted to go into any other area, sort of.
What else do you remember about Yaviska camp?
Well, the one thing that we thought that somebody had got out as message, and we suspected that the International Red Cross from Geneva had come down to close down the camp, because we were then transported to England.
Whereabouts in Belgium is Yaviska camp?
Now, you haven't got a sort of picture if you're being transported in lorries where it actually is, but Jabike must be on any map. It is, I would say, somewhere on the level of, Dunkirk, that area, in that corner on the Belgian side.
In Flanders?
Flanders, yes.
How do you spell Yabika, do you know?
J-A-B-B-E. I don't know whether it's C-K or K-E, Jabike. I think I've spelled it out on my record there.
Were you corresponding with home?
No. No, we had to get no means of corresponding. We didn't get any cards to write out.
Were POWs at this stage tending to blame anybody for what had happened?
Well, I think they were more than anything rebelling against the treatment. They weren't sort of blaming the Nazis or anything like that, but we always had known that the war had been finished, and we were the, even when we were in Holland, we knew, because that was where we, in many a time, even as paratroopers, we had no food. I remember eating nettle soup. You know, the cook went out and moved down some nettles and put them in the pot and cooked them, and there were still little shells and bits and pieces gritty in there. We had very little to eat in some cases when we didn't get the supplies through.
That was before you were captured?
Before I was captured, yes.
In the Netherlands?
Yeah.
How long were you in Jabica camp for, do you think?
I think it was just about possibly a month or month and a half.
Who were the guards around the camp?
Well, we didn't see very much of it. I know the guards were there, and there was a high wire fence, and they walked round. I'm not sure. I think they must have been British.
And you say it was winter time?
Well, it was. Oh, I can't say. Because I remember, you know, people were sucking icicles on the track when, you know, that had condensation in the toilet there. Which I rather thought was very dangerous.
So this sounds like the winter of 45-46?
No. No, no, this was, well, March 44. Have I got a date?
Because you were captured March 1944.
44, yes. And we were...
No, March 1945 you were captured.
45, yes. And it must have been 46.
The winter of 45-46.
Yeah. It wasn't the big winter. No, that's right.
And then you see, if you were captured in March 1945, then you did all that work in Normandy, which must have lasted quite some time. Mm-hmm. The winter would be over, of the winter of 44,
45. Oh, yes, we were still in the spring there. We were still in the spring
so
there.
So it's a new winter, which must have been 45, 46.
I've got the date there. When I came to England, must have been just before that.
It says on your mess tin you've carved that you arrived in Tilbury, 19th of May, 1946.
Yes, it must have been just before that then. It must, can't have been winter. It must have been spring.
Can you tell me about arriving in England?
Well, we went across on the ferry, Dutch ferry, Princess Astrid, I think it was, and arrived in Tilburg. And we were put onto trains there, and I remember the Americans must have had that train before us, because I spied a lot of cigarette ends in the ashtrays, which I promptly emptied several ashtrays to get the tobacco. Anyhow, from there we went to Leicester, in the camp in Leicester. And in the camp of Leicester, we were given as much food as we would possibly could eat, mostly rice pudding with raisins and all that kind of stuff, so sort of build us up again. And we had another peculiar incident in that camp. We had one of our paratroopers came from Poland. And his brother had joined the British Army and was standing guard in the same camp. He was on one of those towers shouting down in Polish, and he shouted down there back in German. That's quite a ding-dong.
Were you given any freedom to go outside camp?
We went out possibly twice, once to a shooting range, but the population there was rather anti-German, so now they spit on us and throw stones at us, which was rather disconcerting. And, well, anyhow, from there we went to...
What did you go to a shooting range for?
Well, we were clearing up something there. Nothing that was anything to do. I think that was only twice we left that camp at Leicester. And all the time we were there, they were building us up. Plenty of free time, exercises and food.
Yes.
From there we went to a camp, a small camp in East Witten near Leyburn, which was only a 14-man camp. And from there we were being bused to the various farms. And I mostly went to a farm in Carperby.
Where?
Carperby. C-A-P-E-R-B-Y. Carperby in Leyburn, and I got quite friendly with those people there. And the biggest surprise was when we arrived in this camp, the sergeant in charge told us, oh, you can go into the village, which is quite an interesting medieval village. It's a long, square sort of village with a market, big green in the center. And to our surprise, most of us were invited by the inhabitants of the village for tea. You know, it was that complete difference to Leicester, and going down there and getting all this sort of attention. The people were very friendly in North Yorkshire, and that's why I'm still in Yorkshire partly.
Why do you think that the people in Leicester were hostile and the people in the Yorkshire Dales?
I have got no idea. Why? I don't know whether they were ever bombed heavily, I'm not sure. It was just a complete, you know, turn round going to North Yorkshire. And I think most of the farmers that employed us then at a shilling a day were very happy to see us there because we were very short of labour. And generally speaking, I think all the Germans were good workers. We had quite a few farm workers between us. And
what kind of farm work was it?
Well, it was sheep farming up there in North Yorkshire. And I, when I was at Carperby, we used to go up in the moors and, you know, collect the sheep and... In one or two cases, a farmer used to take a gun and went up there, and we used to shoot rabbits. And another incident occurred there during that time that the farmer had a cup of tea and gave me the gun. And I saw a rabbit coming out of a hole, and I shot it. And he said, "Don't shoot," you know, and I shot it. He says, "Blimey, you can't shoot." I said, "I was in the German army for a long time." So... from then on, we used to take, he was a special constable, we used to take his overcoat and another gun, and we both used to shoot rabbits. Mind you, there was nobody up there to see us.
Were you in contact with home by now?
Oh yes, by then I had to, well, it was quite difficult because I got this over the International Red Cross because my mother had then from Poland, where she, or East Prussia, where she was living, being back to Germany. And I was a prisoner of war by then. The card I couldn't send, I sent a message from Ranville. There was a Frenchman there who was stationed in Germany, a French soldier. And I actually sent a photograph of mine back to my mother and giving her from that time on, but I was in correspondence with Germany. That was from Randall. And then, of course, a few months later, we sent our cards off. You saw it.
You showed me an example.
Yeah. Now then, we are rather...
And so you were some time in the Yorkshire Dales doing the farm work?
Oh, yes, it was... I learned how to plough, how to drive a tractor. And the other interesting thing was happened there in that farmhouse, there was a grandfather clock on the staircase. And I always looked at it, and the farmer said to me, "Do you know anything about clocks?" I said, "No, but I know something about instruments. Do you mind if I've got a look at it?" So I found off that I could pull the top off and had a look at it, and I found that the pendulum crutch had been distorted. So I straightened it out until I had an even beat, and the clock started going. And put the hood back on, and the next time I came back from the camp to the farm, he had a box, cigar box. He says, "Here's some watches you can have a go at." And that started me off in repairing watches as a prisoner of war. And, well, I'm still doing a bit nowadays.
And by now, were you speaking fluent English?
Well, reasonably enough. I remember on that farm in North Yorkshire, the farmer told me to feed the chickens. And I said, "Where's the bucket?" He says, "What do you mean?" I said, "Something to carry the corn." "Oh, you mean a bucket?" That was one of the sort of incidents. We had a quite amiable relationship on that farm. In one case, we were harvesting hay, and a thunderstorm were coming up, and the lorry arrived, and I went up to the driver and said, "You report on the camp that we are staying, we are getting the harvest in." And there was another prisoner and I, we both got the harvest in before it actually got really thundering down, and we slept in the hay that night. And after that, every day we came to work, there was a packet of 20 gold flake on the table for the two of us to share. Quite nice. And I've got some photographs of them. There was a little girl there, Valerie. For her Christmas present, I made a little farmyard, a wooden plate with fences round and a stable, etc., all that bits and pieces, and the piece of glass for a pond, and the sawdust was collected and with green paint made into grass and such like. And the farmer obtained some animals to make it into a farmyard. And about 5 years ago, I went to see him. And the daughter, Valerie, by then, was a big, tall woman, and she had some children. And she told me that this farmyard is still coming out every Christmas for the children to look at and possibly play with just on Christmas. Rather nice idea. Now then, this is from... I'll have to consult my... From there we went to Hartford, Settleby,